This is One Universe at a Time. I'm Brian Corberline. Science cannot happen in a vacuum. A political vacuum, that is. In order to drum up public support for research, many scientists find that they need to put on a suit and head to Washington, D.C. Dr. Scott Franklin, professor of physics at the Rochester Institute of Technology, is one such researcher. On today's show, he'll explain the continual need to reach out to the lawmakers that fund today's scientific projects. I understand that you've done some, I think it's called congressional advocacy. You've gone down to Washington and met with senators and congressmen.
Their aides.
I've never met them.
Met with the senators and congressmen in a formal meeting.
And this is on an aspect of lobbying for science, is that?
Well, I like to say that I'm not a lobbyist, that we never lobby. I certainly don't have enough money to be a lobbyist, and I'm not articulate enough or glib enough to be a lobbyist. So we advocate for science and science education, policy, and funding.
I guess in some sense it seems almost kind of against the spirit of science because one of the common complaints that people have about scientists is that we're politically involved.
Right.
You know, we're doing this for a political agenda. Global warming is because of, you know, we have ideas of what society should be doing.
So science is in many ways a very bipartisan issue, and Republicans and Democrats are unified in the notion that science and technology have been critical, instrumental in our maintaining a technological edge, in an educated workforce, maintaining America's leadership in the world, and all of the things that we enjoy, TVs, cars, iPads, iPhones, really result from the investment in science and technology that was made 30, 40, 50 years ago. So when we talk about congressional advocacy, we're not talking about these hot button issues that are thorny and for which there is a very great diversity of opinion. What we're trying to advocate for is the notion that science and technology is instrumental to the American way of life, that we reap the benefits of it every day, that our leadership position in the world resulted from the investments that were made in the past, whether it was directed towards NASA, the launch to the moon that led to many advances, the internet, which came out of a government lab. Graphical user interfaces had significant federal funding before it became a billion-dollar industry. The investment in science in a very broad sense is what we're advocating for, not any of the politically charged issues, which are thorny.
The idea of science and science research in general.
That's right. And there are aspects of that that are currently being debated that we scientists, I think, have a very vested role in. For example, there was a proposal last year that would have limited any scientist to one NSF award over their entire career.
Right? Okay.
Now, to a non-scientist, that sounds like a very reasonable proposal. Each scientist gets a little bit of taxpayer-funded dollars
that gets them
their seed funded, and right, exactly, spread the wealth. To those of us who are in the scientific community, however, we realize that, in fact, it is the sustained funding that allows you to really dig deep, and that in the absence of federal funding, laboratories dry up, and faculty and scientists go elsewhere to find jobs, sometimes overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the types of issues that scientists have insight into that the congressional aide or the layperson may not.
Are you trying to lay out plans in terms of specific policy issues, or are you, I guess, presenting one side based on the debate that's been happening?
So it depends very much on the time. And so I've been doing this now for about 5 years. And I should say it is a blast. It is a lot of fun. There are few things that I have enjoyed more than visits to Capitol Hill. It completely makes it worth wearing a suit and tie.
You're one of the few.
I will gladly put on a suit and tie to go into Capitol Hill. And I'm starry-eyed in this way, right? I still feel that it is remarkable that anyone can walk into our governmental buildings. You pass through a metal detector that is less intrusive than the one you get at the airport, and you're there. And you are walking past congressional offices. You are seeing rooms where very profound decisions are made. We are still one of the few governments that allows that, and we were the first. You know, I hate to be all starry-eyed and
USA, you know, number one.
Right, but I happen to think that that is a very, very unique, interesting part of our government, and it still excites me. I'm not naive. I realize that over the last 5 years, the chance that I've had sort of an impact that has tipped the balance on legislation is very small. That's not the goal. So sometimes we have a specific ask where we go in and we start by saying, we know you are considering a continuing resolution. Right. And we think that as you do this, continuing resolution just sets the funding to be whatever it was the previous year. We think that that would hurt science because this is what it would do to NSF. So instead of a continuing resolution, please pass a budget and think about increasing the money that you give to basic research, fundamental science at the National Science Foundation, at the Department of Energy, and we could have a specific request like that. Mm-hmm. In science education, for example, sometimes we will go in and we will say one of our items on our agenda is we feel that every American high school student deserves a physics class taught by a qualified physics teacher. And right. Here's what we mean by that. 70% of high school students are being taught by a high school teacher who has never taken a physics class.
Right.
And we think that is hurting our society. And so we are advocating for policies. We are asking for monies to be written into appropriation bills that will allow high schools to identify and hire physics teachers who actually have degrees in physics, whether it's a minor, an undergraduate degree, or even a master's in physics.
Right, so that they have college-level physics.
And that's something that is particular to the physics and hard sciences. Biology, for example, is most often taught by someone with some biology training. Mm-hmm. Math and physics are the two that are the lowest.
I mean, when you go down to Washington, do you have specific plans of on this day you're meeting this person?
Yes.
Do you wander the halls looking for aides?
The nice thing is that they, and I mean the staff aides in the Capitol Hill offices, this is what they do. So the very first time I did this, I simply called up my representatives. At the time it was Congressman Tom Reed and Senators Schumer and Gillibrand at the time. And I said, I'm going to be in Washington this day. Do you have time where I could meet with somebody and talk about science and science education policy?
Right.
And this is the type of request they get 100 times a day. Okay. So they said, absolutely. Can you come in at this time to meet with this person? And it may be as short as 10 minutes. These are not long meetings. It's been a tremendous lesson in framing my request.
It's the elevator speech.
It's the elevator speech, exactly. And it inverts the way of discussion, right? As a scientist, we're used to laying out a chain of evidence mm-hmm. and getting to the point at the end.
It's and a tentative point at that.
That's right. And a very tentative point at that. We qualify everything. And on Capitol Hill, that is completely upside down because they are used to people asking for things. They want you to ask for things,
right?
That's how they know what their constituents are concerned about. Once you make that ask, they then start thinking about what information they will need to help get what you want. So the goal is to shut up so that they can ask you the questions that they need, that we shouldn't presume that we know what argument will best work for them. So it completely inverts the discussion. You walk in and you say, hi, I'm Scott Franklin. I'm professor of physics at Rochester Institute of Technology, and I'm here to talk with you about funding for science education policy. And we are concerned about getting more high-quality physics teachers into the nation's high schools.
Done. And then they
and
ask
then
the
you
questions.
Stop. And you give them a fact sheet, and you wait for them to ask a question. And they'll say, oh, well, I see that only 30% are being taught by physicists. Who's teaching the others? And then you can go into your spiel about everyone else. Or they may say, what's the roadblock? Why are people not? Right. And then you go into that spiel.
Why does it matter? Why can't anybody teach
physics? Why does it matter? Exactly. That's actually a very important point because society seems to have a very large split between science and technology. Mm-hmm. And so the American Physical Society commissioned a poll a few years ago, and one of the things that was surprising was how many people were in favor of technology and how few people were in favor of fundamental science. And something like 80 or 90% of the population, when asked to describe where does science take place, couldn't describe anything, had no idea of who does science.
Right. Well, 2/3 of Americans can't name a living scientist, for
That's
example.
Right. So this is really important, and it's not something that we can just leave up to chance.
Is this something that you do as part of APS, or is it something that you're doing individually? Or
a little bit of both.
Okay.
The American Physical Society is tremendously helpful. And so whenever I go to Capitol Hill, I contact the APS, I contact the American Institute of Physics, an umbrella consortium that includes APS, American Association of Physics Teachers, and some others. And I tell them I'm going to be there. And sometimes they ask me to make the appointments with the staff aides. Sometimes, you know, at this point now, I've been enough. They know me. They will make the appointments. And then they accompany me from one office to the next.
Okay.
So initially, they were extremely helpful in providing fact sheets, in framing a message and saying, mm-hmm. this is what Congress is dealing with right now. So for example, this spring, Congress is dealing with the Competes Act, which is the congressional act that will fund NSF.
Right.
And so one of the things we want to talk about is if they're going to pass this, you know, what are the restrictions that are put on NSF? One issue that's been very contentious over the last 2 or 3 years is the peer review process. And so Congress is starting to look very closely at how NSF makes funding decisions. And a great deal of that is, in some sense, ignorant of what actually happens. So a year or two ago, I made a visit where I think I met with 10 offices. It was a ridiculous day. And each office was, I'm here to tell you a little bit about how the peer review process at NSF works. I've been on these panels.
Right.
I can tell you how many proposals I get. I can tell you the discussions we have. I can tell you about a recusal conflict of interest policy that right. they had no idea. I don't know if it solved anything. There are still these debates. Congress would like to be able to review every single review, and I had to argue forcefully that anonymity was very important in allowing right. a junior scientist to criticize the Nobel Prize winner and say, right. this isn't a good proposal, you shouldn't fund this.
Right.
Those are issues that we'll go and we'll talk about that we'll do this spring. And that was framed by the American Physical Society and AIP as being the issue of the day.
It sounds like you're dealing with policy issues. You're also dealing with funding issues. Do you ever put in terms of priority? I mean, there's a limited amount of money.
No, and that's one of the... that
Don't fund them. Fund us.
No, and as a matter of fact, the APS has gotten in trouble. Certain people have gone that far to say things, mm-hmm. and that's very dangerous, right? You know, when someone says, and it's not uncommon, well, if I give you money, where am I supposed to take that from?